Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Remembering the victims of another mass shooting.
Oh, son, I love you so much.
And Democrats retake the House but face setbacks in the Senate under President Trump.
Now Democrats, for the first time, will have some power.
Plus, deadly California fires.
There have been harrowing accounts of people literally abandoning their vehicles and getting out to run for their lives.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend out in Thousand Oaks, California. That's where folks are remembering the victims of another mass shooting there on Wednesday night. We're now learning the identities of some of them, including from TV sitcom actress Tamara Mowry Housley and her husband, who say their 18-year-old niece was among those killed.
Police with guns drawn surrounded a bar in Thousand Oaks, California just before midnight as people bloody and hurt ran for their lives.
All of a sudden you hear like the bang bang of the gunshots and it just started going crazy and people were pushing. We thought it was a joke.
Witnesses say the gunman dressed in black shot an unarmed security guard at the front door. Police say 28-year-old Ian Long then sent off a smoke device and fired multiple rounds into the bar, never speaking a word. Hundreds of people fled, some breaking windows and jumping from the second floor to escape.
We just tried to get out, get behind a car, get behind something. And then
yeah, we just tried to take cover.
Jason Kaufman's son Cody was at the bar, and he went to a family reunification center looking for him.
And we did just get the news that he was one of the 11 that were hit and killed.
Oh, son, I love you so much.
Police say Long is a Marine Corps veteran and used a .45 caliber handgun in the shooting. They believe he killed himself at the scene. Long's home was searched for evidence.
We have no idea what the motive was at this point.
Sheriff Sergeant Ron Helis was the first to exchange fire with the gunman and was shot multiple times. Colleagues of the 29-year-old veteran joined in a procession as his body was taken from the hospital to the medical examiner's office. Chris Martinez, CBS News, Thousand Oaks, California.
Now let's talk about those elections, those midterm elections. It was some gains for Democrats, especially in the House, some losses for them in the Senate. Let's talk about this with CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman here in Washington. Steve, you were at the party on Capitol Hill for Democrats and Nancy Pelosi. Tell us about the strategy and the victory of Democrats in the House.
Democrats targeted around 60 to 70 districts where they thought they had a good chance to win. These were districts primarily that were voting for Hillary Clinton 2 years ago. They had Republicans as their representatives, but still in 2016, they voted sometimes by large margins, sometimes by very small margins for Hillary Clinton. Many of these were in suburban areas, and Democrats feel that suburban women especially are coming to their side as each year goes by. So they targeted a number of districts, like I said, around 60 to 70. This is where they thought they could wrestle control of the House away from Republicans, and it turned out to be the case.
Steve, what changes do you expect to see beginning in this new Congress that starts January the 3rd with Democrats at the helm in the House?
They can block legislation they don't like. Number two, because we're in this period of time where the Trump administration, President Trump, his family, cohorts, colleagues are under investigation, they can have their own public investigations. Now, the House has had investigations, but they have been controlled by Republicans. They also have subpoena power. They can also demand people come and testify before them. And they can also ask for things like President Trump's income tax return.
How do you expect President Trump and what could be House Speaker Nancy Pelosi again work together or not work together?
Well, everyone's saying the right things this week. Everyone's being a diplomat. I think when President Trump needs to work with someone because he has no other choice, he can find a way to work with them. I don't know how it's going to result in the end. It's starting off nicely. It could go downhill very quickly if these investigations bother him and if he blames her for the investigations.
Correspondent Steve Futterman on the new control of the House by Democrats. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
In the Florida Senate race, a recount is underway as Republican Governor Rick Scott declares victory over Democrat Senator Bill Nelson. Scott says Democrats are trying to steal the election. Nelson recount attorney Mark Elias.
I can assure you that we will take all of the necessary steps in court to make sure that Senator Nelson's interests are protected if that were to come to pass.
Meanwhile, in the race for governor in Georgia.
I'm Jim Crisul in Atlanta. Democrat Stacey Abrams' campaign continues to dismiss Republican Brian Kemp's claim of victory in the Georgia governor's race. Lawyer John Chandler is part of Abrams' legal team.
All the votes haven't been counted. How can anybody claim a victory when there are enough votes that have not been counted that could cause a runoff?
More than 20,000 provisional ballots must still be counted in the fight for the Georgia governor's mansion. Jim Crisul, CBS News, Atlanta.
Now to the other big story of the week, the resignation of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The president spoke Friday to reporters about Matt Whitaker, his choice to serve as acting attorney general.
He was very, very highly thought of and still is highly thought of.
More from correspondent Jeff Begays.
Justice Department employees saluted Attorney General Jeff Sessions as he departed the building hours after resigning.
Thank you all.
Earlier, he delivered a letter to the White House, which started bluntly, "Dear Mr. President, at your request, I am submitting my resignation." Mr. Trump tweeted the news and said of Sessions, "We wish him well." It was a dramatic, if not surprising, end for one of the president's earliest campaign supporters. But less than a month after being confirmed as attorney general, Sessions angered the president by recusing himself from overseeing the Russia investigation. Career prosecutors at the Justice Department had advised him to do so because of his contacts with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak during the 2016 campaign. The president has railed against the move ever since, frequently disparaging Sessions on Twitter as very weak.
But Jeff Sessions never took control of the Justice Department, and it's a sort of an incredible thing.
I'm disappointed in the Attorney General for many reasons.
After Sessions' recusal, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein took over the Russia probe as Special Counsel Robert Mueller indicted 35 people and companies, including some of the president's top campaign officials. But now Rosenstein will likely also be sidelined, and newly appointed Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker will oversee the investigation. Whitaker, Sessions' chief of staff and a former U.S. attorney from Iowa, has been critical of the Russia probe in the past and has written that it could become a political fishing expedition. Even though Whitaker's thinking appears to be in line with the president as far as the Russia investigation is concerned, the president tweeted that he will nominate someone else to fill that job. One possible candidate, Lindsey Graham, appeared to take himself out of the running, saying that he will stay in the Senate. Jeff Begays, CBS News, Washington.
Coming up, the unusual step the White House took against a CNN correspondent. That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
President Trump spoke out about the election results while attacking reporters at an hour-and-a-half press conference Wednesday. Here's correspondent Chip Reed.
I'll be honest. I thought it was a very close to complete victory.
President Trump celebrated the election results, focusing on the seats Republicans gained in the Senate, and he gave the lion's share of the credit to himself.
I only had me. I didn't have anybody else.
He downplayed the Democratic takeover of the House and said there's a good chance the two parties can work together.
I would like to see bipartisanship. I'd like to see unity.
But when asked what will happen if House Democrats use their power as the majority to initiate a flurry of investigations of the president and his administration, his tone changed dramatically.
If they do that, then it's just all it is a warlike posture.
The press conference itself took on a warlike posture as he repeatedly lashed out at reporters.
That's enough. That's enough. That's enough. That's enough.
Pardon me, ma'am.
Sit down, please. Sit down. I didn't call you.
Hurling insults when he thought questions were unfair.
You called yourself a nationalist. Some people saw that as emboldening white nationalists. Now people are also saying
that
the president...
That's such a racist question.
And it wasn't just reporters who were on the receiving end of his ire.
Mike Kaufman. Too bad, Mike. Peter Roskam didn't want the embrace. And Barbara Comstock was another one. I mean, I think she could have won that race.
He mocked Republican incumbents by name who distanced themselves from him and lost.
Mia Love gave me no love, and she lost. Too bad. Sorry about that, Mia.
The president recently threatened to shut down the government if Congress doesn't give him the money he needs to build a wall on the Mexican border. During his press conference, he was asked if that might be his strategy for the upcoming lame duck session of Congress. His response, it's possible. Chip Reed, CBS News, The White House.
Following that press conference, the White House took action against CNN reporter Jim Acosta.
That decision was to pull Acosta's White House press pass after a testy exchange with the president.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible.
Acosta had tried to ask Mr. Trump a question, then a second question. A White House intern tried to take the mic away from him.
All I can say at that point is that I was trying to hang on to the microphone so I could continue to ask the president questions.
Acosta on CNN's AC360, the White House Correspondents Group, says no reporter should be punished for trying to ask a question. Peter King, CBS News.
In Washington with us is Dan Shelley, Executive Director of the Radio, Television, and Digital News Association, representing journalists across the country. Dan, what's your reaction to the White House taking the unprecedented move to ban Jim Acosta from the White House grounds?
Well, first of all, it's despicable. It's unacceptable. And I don't think we as a free society should accept it.
What's wrong with it?
Anytime a president of the United States or anyone in a position of power seeks retribution against a journalist simply for that journalist doing his or her job, it runs counter to everything the First Amendment stands for. And more important than that, it runs counter to the public's need to know what the president or any other public official who does this is up to.
Playing devil's advocate here for the White House, do you think that Jim has had the decorum of a White House correspondent interacting with the president?
There's no question that Mr. Acosta has been aggressive, assertive, certainly, more likely aggressive in some situations. But I'm not a mind reader, but my guess is he feels as though he has to in order to get a response. I mean, this guy has been insulted every which way but Sunday by the president and by others in the administration since before the 2016 election.
What should be done?
Well, we, RTDNA, stands in lockstep with the White House Correspondents Association, the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, and other press freedom groups in demanding that the White House restore Mr. Acosta's hard pass, his press credentials, immediately.
What kind of example is this of how the White House has been approaching the press in the last nearly 2 years?
It's been unprecedented in modern American history, at least. I mean, I hearken back to the 1980s when Sam Donaldson would shout questions at President Reagan on the White House lawn. And President Reagan would shrug those questions off, choose not to answer them. I'm sure he didn't appreciate those questions, but I can't imagine it ever crossed President Reagan's mind to revoke Sam Donaldson's credentials. We have elevated and escalated this anti-press venom emanating from the White House and from local and regional and statewide office holders who tend to support the president's ideology. We've seen this escalate to a whole new level. It's incredible how bullying these folks are.
Historians, even press advocates would say it's healthy for there to be a confrontational, perhaps, relationship between the press and those they cover, including those in the White House. When did this cross the line, do you think?
It crossed the line the moment the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, called journalists enemy of the American people. That was the moment that crossed the line.
What about the safety of journalists? Is that still a concern?
So far this year, more than 40 journalists have been attacked. 5 journalists, at least, have been murdered simply for doing their jobs. And while you can't draw a direct cause and effect relationship or conclusion between the president's rhetoric and those heinous acts, you have to imagine that at least some of those physical attacks were committed by people who felt emboldened by the president's rhetoric.
What can the president do then to respond to this?
Calm down. Relax. This was the most media savvy, arguably, the most media savvy president in our nation's history. He hosted a reality show on television. He's worked the media for decades. He knows how to deal with the news media. What we're seeing today is a president not dealing with the news media, but demonizing the news media to further his own political agenda.
Criticism of the White House and its attacks on the press from Dan Shelley, executive director of RTDNA. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
This weekend, President Trump is in Paris, marking the end of World War I a century ago. But it's not the celebration the president's been expecting. Here's CBS News correspondent Elaine Cobb in Paris.
When President Trump was upset his plan for a military parade in Washington was voted down, he tweeted that he would instead go to Paris for its November 11 parade. Except there is no parade this weekend. There never is for Armistice Day. Elaine Cobb, CBS News, Paris.
Folks usually gather around the Arc de Triomphe to mark Armistice Day or Veterans Day back in the U.S. Up next, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg admitted to the hospital.
Tests showed she fractured 3 ribs on her left side.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters Podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
In California, 3 large wildfires have destroyed parts of the state, including one near Sacramento that destroyed an entire town called Paradise. More from correspondent David Begno, who visited the scene there.
There have been harrowing accounts of people literally abandoning their vehicles and getting out to run for their lives.
Heavenly Father, please help us.
Surrounded by walls of flames, whipped by winds of 50 miles per hour, people drove through hell trying to escape. Their homes and those of their neighbors burned to the ground.
And everything is burning up around us.
The campfire exploded in intensity, filling the sky with toxic smoke.
My God.
That could be seen from San Francisco, which is nearly 150 miles away.
We grabbed our animals and some food and some clothes, and we're getting the heck out of here.
There was very little time for the 27,000 people who live in Paradise to evacuate.
Everything was ignited. By the time I got out of my house, it was like everything was on fire.
Just after 1 a.m., Cal Fire District Chief John Cox escorted us into the town. It is a disaster. We saw those cars that people abandoned as they felt trapped and decided to run. Some people took refuge in concrete parking lots, which proved to be lifesavers. Officials tell us firefighters used their own shelter kits to shield civilians from the flames.
We're talking devastated.
That's Cal Fire Captain Scott McLean.
The town center is completely on the ground. On the south side as well as the north side has been hit very hard as well.
I hope people got up. I woke up all my neighbors, got them out of bed. Next thing you know, their house is on fire. I saved their lives.
Dwayne D'Amico, a retired engineer, escaped with his dog.
I don't think there's not going to be a home left in Paradise. I don't know. When I left, it was all on fire.
David Begno reporting tens of thousands of homes are under evacuation orders in L.A. and Ventura counties, including the entire city of Malibu because of wildfires there. President Trump has signed a proclamation suspending the entry of migrants seeking asylum between ports of entry at the southern border amid claims by Mr. Trump a caravan of migrants is about to invade the U.S. Correspondent Cammie McCormick has more.
These new regulations will circumvent laws making anyone eligible for asylum no matter how they entered the country. The measures will go into effect Saturday and last 3 months. They're designed to funnel asylum seekers through official border crossings, which are already stressed. Homeland Security officials are looking at changes in staffing at those crossings.
I'm Adrian Bard in Mexico City. Hundreds of Central American migrants did leave here, traveling on the metro to a bus station that will take them to parts north. They had been staying in a sports stadium conditioned as a shelter here in the Mexican capital. There are still about 5,000 more migrants at that facility, but they decided to wait another day before heading towards the U.S.
The Supreme Court's oldest justice is recovering from a fall.
Justice Ginsburg fell Wednesday night in her office at the Supreme Court, and after experiencing discomfort overnight at home, went to George Washington University Hospital. Tests showed she fractured 3 ribs on her left side, and she was admitted for observation and treatment. CBS News chief medical correspondent Dr. John LaPook said fracturing ribs can be serious.
So people may not take as deep a breath as they should. The lungs can underexpand, and you could potentially get pneumonia.
Small in stature, but big in influence, liberals for years have worried about Ginsburg's health and her retirement. She survived cancer twice, and in 2012 and 2013 also suffered rib injuries and falls. But she's remained active on the bench and in the gym, with a workout routine she shared earlier this year with Stephen Colbert.
I'm cramping and I'm working out with an 85-year-old woman.
She told CBS Sunday Morning in 2016 she would continue to work as long as she felt she could give it her all.
I will do this job as long as I feel that I can do it full steam. At my age, you have to take it year by year. So this year, I know I'm fine. What will be next year or the next year, I can't predict.
Now, Dr. LaPook said that as people age, bones just get more brittle, so they're more likely to break if you fall. And he said broken ribs will heal gradually, generally over a period of a couple weeks. So Justice Ginsburg should be recovered, back in business by then. Jan Crawford, CBS News, the Supreme Court.
Ginsburg left the hospital Friday. Roller derbies are making a comeback, but putting, this time, women's empowerment in the spotlight.
Jillian Belloveri is an astrophysicist by day and a roller derby champion by night. Her derby name?
Number 137, Big Banger.
So, Big Banger, I'm the beginning of the universe, and I hit people really hard.
Her goal is to race around the track as many times as possible, and she relies on her teammates to clear the way, pushing, trapping, and tangling with opponents who want to stop her.
This is a sport.
The players say safety is paramount. No punching, no elbows, no hair pulling. But as you can hear, this is a full contact sport.
I get knocked down a lot, but I get back up.
The hits, though, are different from the roller derby of the 1970s, when matches were scripted for entertainment. Today's roller derby is all about empowerment for women of all shapes, sizes, and backgrounds.
We are a very supportive subcultural community that celebrates women doing amazing things.
And this night, Bronx Gridlock went skate to skate against Queens of Pain for the Gotham Girls League Championship. Bronx Gridlock took home the trophy.
I don't have any words for this amazing feeling. I'm overwhelmed.
Belloveri hopes as the Big Banger, she can harness those universe-shaping powers again at the international finals. Meg Oliver, CBS News, New York.
G Jewish women on alert in L.A.
Police in Los Angeles are looking for the man who's been snatching wigs from the heads of Orthodox Jewish women.
Someone taking off a wig is extremely, it's humiliating.
It's happened to that woman and others in North Hollywood. They wear a wig as a symbol of modesty after marriage.
This is something for a Jewish woman, which is so personal.
That rabbi condemns the wig snatching. L.A. police consider it a hate crime and have released surveillance video images, hoping someone can help make an ID. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
A violent attack in Australia.
Terror hit the streets of Melbourne, Australia, when a man set fire to a pickup full of gas canisters and then went on a stabbing spree, attacking three people, killing one. Shocked residents watched from a window as the violent rampage continued before police eventually shot and killed the man.
From what we know of that individual, we are treating this as a terrorism incident.
Australian authorities say the Somalian man was known to intelligence officials. ISIS claims the attacker was one of its fighters. Tina Kraus, CBS News.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, the view from space.
You know, there are no political borders when you look at Earth from space.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Retired astronaut Scott Kelly is out with a new book, Infinite Wonder, an astronaut's photographs from a year in space. Scott, you know, it's a beautiful book, as I think you can agree with. Do you consider yourself a photographer, or is it more of a hobby?
You know, I was amateur photographer before I became an astronaut, which was in 1996, which is also you know, the time when not everyone had a camera in their pockets at all times. So, you know, photography is something I did maybe a little bit on vacation, but not, you know, I would not have considered myself a photographer at that point. But as an astronaut, you take a lot of pictures, and you take them for various reasons. You know, some are for their aesthetic value, and others for engineering purposes or scientific purposes. And we have a lot of photography training, and you know, having flown in space four times, my last time for nearly a year. I think after that, I would kind of consider myself a semi-professional photographer.
There's of course a lot of beautiful pictures of sweeping desert views, rivers from space, but I think a lot of what interests me in your book is this everyday kind of mundane stuff on the space station, like watching TV or unpacking boxes or one of your colleagues making an espresso for herself. There's also a shot of you being carried in a chair by four or five people after landing the Soyuz. What was that moment like?
Well, I had, you know, just been in space for 340 days, and after you land in the desert steppes of Kazakhstan, they don't let you walk. I could have walked, not well, but, you know, they're concerned that you might trip or fall over. It's very muddy at times. When I landed, it was. So they, you know, they carry you from the Soyuz landing site to a medical tent, and it's not until you get inside that medical tent do you have your first opportunity to walk after being in space for so long.
And what was that like?
You know, it's funny. I had a video of it, and I posted it at one point on Twitter or Instagram. And during my first attempt at walking, I made a joke about how I felt like Jar Jar Binks from Star Wars. So, in other words, very clumsy and dizzy and a little bit nauseous, too. Actually, a lot nauseous.
What did you notice from that perspective from the space station of Earth?
Well, Earth's a very beautiful place, mostly. You know, there are certainly parts of our planet that are almost always covered in pollution, and that catches your attention. You know, the thinness and the fragility of the atmosphere is certainly a surprising thing that you notice when you get to space, how it's like our atmosphere is like a thin film over the surface. And then the other thing you notice is, you know, there are no political borders when you look at Earth from space. Of course, you know, at night with lighting and you can, you know, make out political borders. But during the daytime, you don't see them. And you know, it gives you the sense that we're all in this, you know, this thing called humanity together, and we need to work together to solve our problems, which there are many. So I think the experience gives, you know, people that have had the privilege to see the Earth from space a new perspective on humanity.
When you hear news about things like the Space Force, how do you think that affects America's relationship in space with other countries?
Well, you know, NASA's, you know, charter as a space flight organization, as a civilian organization, you know, it's not going to have, I don't think it will have or should have much to do with the militarization of space. You know, certainly the U.S. government is party to certain treaties with regards to, you know, what we can and cannot do in space. And I hope we, you know, stay committed to those. You know, I'm not sure where that the idea of the Space Force is going to go. It seems kind of like the jury is out. I just hope that it doesn't encourage other countries to, you know, abandon their commitments to the people, the peaceful use of outer space. And, you know, that's my hope with the whole thing.
So do you worry about an arms race from other countries?
You know, I think it's always a risk, right? But, you know, do I worry about it? I guess a little bit. Is it possible? Absolutely. You know, I just hope that we don't, you know, our actions don't encourage it.
Retired NASA astronaut Scott Kelly on his new book, Infinite Wonder. Thanks, Scott.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
A new approach to educating kids on drug use in Denver schools in a state that pioneered legal recreational pot. Here's correspondent Barry Peterson.
There has been an increase in juvenile marijuana violations in Denver since 2015.
False.
Oh, John, you got weeded out.
It's like Jeopardy for juveniles, and the topic is pot. This slickly produced game show is shown where teens get their information on social media.
False.
And the same quiz show format plays out in classes across the city.
What percentage of Denver youth see regular marijuana use as a risky behavior?
And learning more is making kids use marijuana less, says Ashley Kilroy, who runs the pot education program for the city.
So what are the numbers showing in terms of teen use with teenagers in Denver?
The numbers are showing that use has dropped significantly.
The city's point of pride is a survey showing the number of kids who have reported using pot in the last 30 days dropped from 26% to less than 21% over the last 2 years. But from the students, we got a big dose of teenage doubt about the program. That the adults aren't trusting kids with all the facts, says junior Isaiah Diaz.
There's obviously medical benefits to it, otherwise it wouldn't be legal.
So it doesn't seem fair or balanced.
It's not properly balanced.
Hannah Elgul is a senior.
I think they are afraid to tell us the good side just because they think they might influence the way we think.
Like
they might encourage us to use it.
In truth, the program is a lot like marijuana laws in America, a work in progress. But so far, it's hitting the key goal it set, persuading more and more kids to give pot a pass.
Marijuana can damage which two major organs in the human body?
A, brain and lungs.
A, brain and lungs. Check the board.
Barry Peterson, Denver.
Meanwhile, cigarette smoking is on the decline.
Back in the 60s, Americans liked to light up, with 40% of adults smoking. Now, the smoking rate is down to just 14%.
And this is really the lowest we've ever seen since we started monitoring cigarette smoking back in the mid-1960s.
The CDC's Brian King says while the news is good, there's also some bad news, with one in five adults still using some form of tobacco product.
Among young adults, e-cigarettes and hookah are the most common products.
He says it's time to modernize strategies when it comes to tobacco control so that it includes more than just cigarettes. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News Atlanta.
Coming up, donuts for a good cause.
So I said, let's just come here, buy his inventory out every morning.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
He has keys to the universe.
Actually, it's a key fob.
Right. You have a fob to the universe. Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
A TV hit coming to the big screen.
Been suffering from Breaking Bad withdrawal? Hold on, Bryan Cranston is confirming that there's a two-hour movie connected to the series in the works, though he's not sure he'll be in it. He says he hasn't read the script yet, and his character Walter White might not be part of the story, but Cranston says he'd absolutely return to the character. The spinoff is set to start shooting in New Mexico under the codename Greenbrier later this month. Allison Keyes, CBS News.
48 Hours correspondent Tracy Smith is back this weekend with an emotional story about a brilliant Ivy League student allegedly killed because he was gay and Jewish. Tracy, what happened?
Blaise Bernstein, who, as you mentioned, was a brilliant student at the University of Pennsylvania, was home here in Southern California for the holidays, and he went missing. And after an exhaustive search, police found his body in a local park. It turns out that he went to the park with a guy he knew from high school named Sam Woodward. Sam Woodward was charged with his murder. It turns out that Blaise was stabbed multiple times. And as investigators gathered evidence, they learned that Woodward had ties to a Nazi group called Atomwaffen. And Blaise was Jewish and gay. And now Sam has been charged with Blaise's murder and with a hate crime enhancement. Detectives believe that Blaise was killed because he was gay.
So do you think Blaise was targeted?
That's a good question. The DA does think that he's found hundreds of images of hate on Sam's cell phone and on his computer. And he does think that there's enough evidence to prove that he was targeted, that he was killed because he was gay.
Now, you also talked to Blaise's parents. What was that like?
Yes. Jeannie and Gideon Bernstein are an amazing couple. Shortly after they found out that Blaise had been murdered, brutally murdered, they started this campaign called Blaise It Forward, which basically is about fighting hate with love. And they just encourage people all over the country, all over the world, to do random acts of kindness, whether it's giving to a charity or just buying somebody that you normally wouldn't talk to a cup of coffee, to fight hate with kindness. And it's amazing watching this take off. Blaise It Forward has become an entire movement.
What's the status of the trial or investigation?
It looks like the trial, it's likely to happen the end of next year. Right now, Sam Woodward was arrested. He was charged with murder, and then recently they added this hate crime enhancement. There might be more charges, and the trial's likely to happen by the end of next year.
Correspondent Tracy Smith, good talking with you.
Thanks very much.
You can catch 48 Hours on Saturday nights on CBS television or stream at any time on CBS All Access. A new reason to deck the halls early.
A study in the Journal of Environmental Psychology suggests that the sooner you put out your Christmas decorations, the happier you'll be.
Some people feel like the minute Halloween goes down, I decorate for Christmas. And they love that. It's a tradition for them. It does make them happy.
Dr. Amy Dixon, clinical psychologist at LSU Health Sciences Center, says it may induce warm and fuzzy feelings about childhood experiences. The study also claims that people who decorate the outside of their homes are viewed as friendlier and more approachable than those who don't decorate. Don Ames for CBS News, New Orleans.
The country's largest online retailer claiming its holiday shopping turf the old-fashioned way.
Amazon is reaching out the old-fashioned way this holiday season. The company's hoping to snag displaced Toys R Us shoppers before Walmart and Target get to them. It's mailed out glossy catalogs featuring 70 pages of bright, smiling kids in PJs playing with Barbies, board games, and PlayStations. Shoppers will be able to scan QR codes on the pages and drop their items right into online shopping carts. Digital versions of the Holiday of Play catalog are available on Kindle and in PDF form online. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Finally this weekend, a community comes together for two California donut shop owners.
7 days a week, John Chan arrives a little after 4 in the morning to open his donut shop in Seal Beach, California.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Two dozen.
The first customers arrive by 4:30. These days, you have to get there early because the donuts are likely to be sold out before dawn.
I'm getting 5 dozen donuts.
5 dozen donuts?
5 dozen, yeah. I'm going to take care of the staff today at my kids' elementary school.
Since 1990, John Chan has been behind the counter with his wife, Stella, by his side.
How is she doing?
Thank you. She's okay.
John's wife of more than 30 years is now recovering from a brain aneurysm. Her sister stepped in to help out, but customers immediately missed Stella.
She's smiling, full of life, always in a great mood, just says, hi, how are you? Good morning.
Because of their affection for the man who makes the confections, the community wanted to help.
As word spread about Stella, people said, we'll give you some money. We'll open a GoFundMe page. We'll give you some money.
Oh, no, she don't want it. We have good enough. I can make by myself. It's good enough.
You didn't want people to just give you money?
No. I'm not used.
We wanted to offer John some money, but he's a proud man and didn't want to take it. So I said, let's just come here, buy his inventory out every morning early so he can get home and be with his wife and help mend her back to full health.
One person shared Chan's story on social media, suggesting the community could help out and bring donuts to work, church, school, because as soon as the donuts are sold out, John could leave and spend more time with his wife. Suddenly, donuts were selling by the dozens and dozens.
I'd like to get a dozen donuts.
Have 2 dozen.
Give me 4 dozen.
I'm from Minnesota, and I heard about this. This is awesome.
You heard about this from your daughter?
My daughter and her husband are stationed in Hawaii. They're in the military, and she got a hold of us and said we needed to come down and support this family.
We're busy, but I don't mind. I like it.
John and Stella are refugees from Cambodia. They became part of the fabric of this community, selling donuts to generation after generation.
Yeah, they're national treasures here at Seal Beach. Yeah, 28 years right here. Yeah, they're great people.
And that is why, morning after morning, as the sun comes up, the donuts are disappearing.
Thank you.
Have a good day. I can say thank you very much for neighbor or community. They all helping me. So much.
By 6:45, just more than 2 hours after Chan opened,
Okay. Nearly
everything is gone but the holes.
I ordered the whole pan of the donut holes.
The whole pan of the donut?
Yes.
Is there anything left for you to order?
I ordered the second pan. There were 2 pans and we took them all. Yep.
In this little shop by the sea, the only thing sweeter than the donuts is the outpouring of affection for the man behind the counter.
John, I just want to say thank you for everything.
Oh, thank you.
John Blackstone, yeah. Seal Beach, California.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.